DLFBall.com and the DLF family of podcasts. It's me, it's Tommy B, and this is the Superflex Super Show. Hey, Super Friends, no John Hogue, no Superflex group today. This is really meant to be more of a bonus episode. I've got two guys that I love chatting with. I had a chance to be on their show actually earlier in the year, and they've been gracious enough to return the favor. I've got Evan and Mike Cash. Hey, how you guys doing today?
Oh, we're great. We're fired up to be here. I mean, any night that you can talk about football and just hang out with some good people, it's a good day.
Yeah, I mean, how do you beat talking about Superflex theory and how to win these leagues?
This is kind of serendipity too, because let's be honest, we were supposed to be on a different show, y'all. But it's just, it didn't work. Scheduling didn't work for us, unfortunately. But you guys were game to come on and talk about something entirely different than maybe what we planned to. So I appreciate your flexibility. And I'm excited to see where the conversation goes. I've got some ideas that I want to bring up with you, some concepts. First and foremost, why don't you just let the listeners know who you are, what you do, and where they can find your work.
Yeah, so Evan and I are the co-hosts of the Fantasy Football RPG podcast. If you're ever looking for the extra nerdy, super nerdy show, I mean, this one's superhero based. Ours is Dungeons and Dragons based, so just look for the dragons on YouTube. You can find my writing over at Last Word on Sports, where I'm an editor, and I feel like I stole all of Evan's thunder because we just hang out together all the time. So sorry.
Your turn. Yeah, we hang out a lot. Mike's definitely trying to get me more into writing articles. I like more of the minutia, you know, offensive linemen, looking at how that plays into offensive schemes, looking into offensive coaching staffs, looking into more of those things rather than the actual player takes to be able to say, hey, this is what actually makes a good offense. This is what makes the offense tick.
Yeah, man. And at your show, at the FFRPG podcast, you guys usually kick off with a question that has nothing to do with fantasy football, right?
Correct, yes.
I told my wife this, who's been on the Superflex Super Show a few times, and she said, well, just ask them what Lord of the Rings race they would choose to be if they had to pick one. So Evan, why don't you kick us off there?
How many races do I have?
Oh my gosh. Evan, a self-professed nerd.
I just want to be Gollum. I just want to find my precious, you know. that is what I want to go for.
Man.
Is that a race? I don't know. Is he a race? What race is he? Creepy. Yeah, I just want to be Gollum.
Yeah, he's one of the river folk, right?
Okay, there you go.
How about you, Mike?
Oh man. I mean, I feel like I have to say I would just be a man because I have the tattoo of Aragorn's sword on my thigh. Awesome. But if you made me choose something different, I've always just identified with the dwarves. Like, they are super strong for their size. They have a little bit of a drinking problem and a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And I think we can all identify with that a little bit.
Absolutely. When I was younger, I identified with the elves because I was just like this scrawny little kid. And I wanted to be graceful and really cool and live a long time, that kind of stuff. But the older I get, the more I relate to the halflings, to the hobbits. Like, they seem to have just such a good time. Yep. That, like, that is the life that I really would like to have moving into my late 30s. But let's get into a little bit of Superflex for the listeners. I want to start with you, Evan. Just tell me, are you in Superflex leagues? And generally, how do you approach the format compared to maybe a one quarterback league?
Yeah, so I transitioned from having mostly one quarterback leagues into being mostly Superflex leagues back in 2020. So I've been doing Superflex for a couple years now. Definitely appreciate the format, appreciate the flexibility that it gives you, appreciate the fact that quarterbacks are actually valued because it always felt like in one quarterback leagues, like I just didn't care. I was streaming quarterbacks every single week, playing the matchups, finding those guys that were just easily able to be traded for or to be able to be picked up. So yeah, I really appreciate the format. I like the bigger leagues, rather than the start 9, start 10, you know, I like to look for more of those start 12, start 13 leagues, And I definitely like a tight end premium because, as Mike knows, I'm a stand for tight ends. I think they don't get nearly enough respect. They do so much in an offense and help offenses run so just smooth, efficient, just like a well-oiled machine when you have a tight end that can do it all.
Absolutely. And we're going to get into tight ends later on in this episode for sure. But Mike, tell us about your general approach to Superflex and how long you've been playing.
Yeah, so we've been playing in Superflex leagues for about as long as we've been playing in leagues. I mean, everybody started with a one quarterback, either like a family or a work or a friends league. And then as you got addicted, you're like, how do I make quarterbacks matter more? So most of my dynasty leagues are two quarterback or Superflex. And then a lot of my redraft ones are Superflex. Or I even played in a Chuck Bass host one every year that it's hilarious. It's only quarterbacks.
So no.
Games, you each pick five quarterbacks, and it is a nightmare. Great time, though. So a lot of Superflex experience. I try to approach it, depending on whether it's redraft or dynasty, and I'm sure we'll get into some minutia with that. But redraft, I really want like one stud, and then I'll wait and I'll grab a Baker Mayfield type. I'll grab a Will Levis type this year, like somebody late that can like fill in for me. But in dynasty, like you got to make sure you get two. So we can dive into that more later.
Absolutely. We're more of a dynasty-centric podcast, at least in the non-point scoring season. When we get into week one, week two, I think everybody's mentality shifts more towards a redraft thought process just because that's kind of how dynasty has traced as well. It's very similar in terms of roster builds, in terms of really the approaches, the week-to-week variance is something that you have to contend with now in dynasty. It's not like you can pick a wide receiver and have him quote unquote develop on your bench for a few years. It's really like get him in and get him producing or trade them away. But I want to focus on quarterbacks a little bit. My co-host on the Superflex Super Show, John Hogue, has something called QBX or quarterback extreme as a philosophy in which he wants to roster five starting quarterbacks and really cycle through them throughout the season, picking optimal matchups and hoarding that roster construction over his league mates, really having that abundance and forcing others to maybe put wide receivers or running backs, sometimes tight ends, in that super flex position. I want to ask you, Evan, how do you roster construct in a super flex league? Is it pretty consistent across your leagues or does that vary?
It varies. I like to try different things out between the leagues. I think my standard is to be able to go get one hammer at quarterback, being able to look at that and say, all right, I'm going out, paying what it costs to go get one of the top five, top six guys, right about where I have that tier break right now. And then looking at it and then going and saying, okay, I want a low-end QB1, high-end QB2, and then my third QB, like, I'm just looking for somebody that can just start, somebody that can doesn't have to be good. You know, give me a going into this season, if the Vikings don't get a quarterback, you know, you're looking at a quarterback situation there that it's probably a 1 year rental. I'm just kind of cycling through my QB3s. So I'm usually staying pretty thin at quarterback and actually getting a lot deeper at running back when the season comes along. Because I think there's so many injuries that happen at the running back position. That I try and have a lot of those backups that could easily get a shot and could easily be slotted into lineups when the starter gets hurt.
You said you want one of the top five or six. Does that typically track consensus, or is there anybody in your top five or six that is outside of consensus?
Yeah, so comparatively to consensus right now, I actually have CJ Stroud a little bit lower. I think his pinnacle is already here for his dynasty value. Just generically kind of going through quarterbacks, it's going to be Mahomes, it's going to be Allen. I'm looking at Lamar still in there. Burrow and Hurts are going to be my top five. Burrow, I think, has enough dynasty value that the community values him high enough that he stays in there. I think Herbert took a little bit of a hit in the community's eyes this offseason. So yeah, I would say generically that five right there, and then Stroud is outside of that top five for me personally.
I totally agree. I actually traded away Stroud today in a flurry of moves. I want to get your opinion on this real quick. We're going to get to you, Mike, I promise. But now that we've got Stroud on the brain, I want to ask your opinion. I traded him away for the 101 and a first, second, and third from who I think is the worst manager in my dynasty league. And then immediately flipped that 101 into Justin Herbert and Marquise Brown. So I turned CJ Stroud into Justin Herbert, Marquise Brown, and a fairly high first, second, and third round pick in 2025. Is that the type of move that you would do if you had CJ Stroud?
Yeah, I mean, if I could have, I personally think that Herbert is actually going to go down in value when people see him in the Harbaugh offense to start the season while he's getting acclimated into that offense, especially if they don't do much at wide receiver. You should be able to see pretty quickly what their plan is come this draft. We've seen what their plan is through this offseason. So I think Herbert definitely has a depressed value right now. Definitely love buying Herbert. But I think that 101 I would have been trying to use for something a little bit different because Caleb Williams is so valued by the community right now. I mean, people have him and Marv, and then they have a little bit of a break before you start getting to the other two wide receivers and the other two quarterbacks. So I think might not have quite been that secondary move that I would be doing, but I can understand the thought process.
What do you think, Mike?
If I could cycle, so I would do that move, but I want to cycle back to what we're talking about with Herbert's value right now. So I agree that it is down and is on a downtrend, but I think that the moment that the season kicks off, we've seen Harbaugh roll out Kaepernick, we've seen him roll out athletic quarterbacks and know how to use them. And he went out and got Greg Roman, who famously uses athletic quarterbacks to run. Like, Justin Herbert is a top 10 testing quarterback athletically of all time. Like, he is one of the most athletic quarterbacks we've seen. He's huge, he's fast, he's strong. And if they are asking him to run more because his wide receiver one is Quentin Johnston or Josh Palmer, like, that, it sounds bad to say his wide receiver one is Josh Palmer, but maybe his wide receiver one is just his legs. So.
I really like that point, and I like it because I made this deal and it makes me feel better about it.
I'm here for you. This is me just trying to gas you up a little bit. I do think Caleb Williams probably could have gone for more, but I traded Caleb for Kyle Murray and Tyjae Spears before the Tyjae hype died. So back to Evans, like, do you have five or six guys, and like, are there any that are probably outside of consensus that you think should be in there? Like, Kyler Murray is my guy. I think that he is criminally undervalued, top 10 in points per game every year, will continue to be a starter as long as the opportunity is there, and the opportunity is not going away in Arizona anytime soon. Like, he's a locked and loaded fantasy asset until the time he decides to hang him up. So I just rather have the security and the warm, fuzzy feeling that Kyler provides and just know that he's not going to do as great when Call of Duty rolls out.
It is amazing. And like, I don't buy into that whole hyperbole, but it's amazing. I saw somebody put out charts of exactly when the release happened, and his production does tail off. I happen to think it's because he's 5'10 and he takes a lot of brutal hits, and NFL is like, it's a tough league for anybody if you're 6'6" or you're 5'10". But I'm with you. I think that Kyler Murray is one of the more underrated quarterbacks. But I'm not going to let you off the hook, Mike. Why don't you tell us how you approach quarterback in terms of roster construction in your Dynasty Superflex leagues?
Yeah, I'm going to open with the worst answer on the podcast ever. It depends. Mm-hmm. But I really, so there's one of the football guy staff, Leo, if you're listening to this, I love you. But he does a really big study on understanding your league mates and their tendencies. Like, some people are super trade active. Some people don't check their phones from January through October. Like, there are just different kinds of people in your leagues, and you need to understand who's new and who's new. And if you can understand what kind of league you're getting a part of, that's how I value the quarterback position. So yeah, if I know it's a league that's going to be very stagnant and it's very hard to get deals done, I'm going to try to construct it that I have a stud quarterback and I have two fill-in quarterbacks, and then I'm just trying to get the best value for my team and plug in a starting lineup. If I know that it's going to be a league that, like, trades are flying and everyone's excited and everyone's into it, normally in those leagues, like, quarterbacks are viewed more highly because they're a finite asset. There's only 32 starters. And of the 32 starters, like, we only really feel good about like 19 or 20 of them. So yep, if you can get your hands on as many of those as possible, that's when I would do the super flex extreme. And then you, all of a sudden, like, you're selling Daniel Jones for T. Higgins. Like, you're selling Sam Howell for, like, I saw Sam Howell go for, like, DeAndre Swift and, like, 3 or 4 seconds last year. Like, there are opportunities that you can make deals to accrue value for your team because during your startup, you just grab as many as possible. So it depends. But if I'm sitting and I have to have this lineup for the whole year, it's one stud and two people that I know will be starters for the whole year.
Yeah, so it seems like both of you lean towards three quarterbacks in your build, having somebody reliable, having a second starter that you feel decent about sort of matching your opponent, and then really taking the dredges for your third quarterback. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's about right. I think I need my third quarterback to be a little better than what Evan's looking for, and I think my second quarterback might be a little worse than Evan's looking for, so we probably meet in the middle around there.
Interesting. So how often are you starting your third quarterback willingly?
So with the way that I build my teams, it's lineup dependent for that super flex spot. So sometimes we'll be rolling out Jared Goff because he's at home and he's a super safe option there. Sometimes we'll be rolling out Baker Mayfield because it's a really good matchup. He's playing the Panthers defense and they stink. Like, so when you have two quarterbacks that are close, you can feel better about playing the matchup game as opposed to, well, I have this player, I have to start them. Like, that's great because you probably have studs and it's awesome, but I kind of like the minutia of being able to find lineup advantages to make that second quarterback the better of the two compared to a Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes type player.
Yeah, I think that's not an atypical way to play. And I think it's probably a fairly efficient philosophy in terms of the quarterback position. I don't know if y'all have ever heard of the strategy that I try to employ, but I try to get the top five quarterbacks in my super flex leagues. And it's for that influence that you referred to earlier, Evan. Like, I want to exert some force on my league mates. I don't like the concept of them having it easy at quarterback. And so I'm willing to just dump almost all of my value into the quarterback position. But before we get into that, I want to talk about wide receivers. My co-host, John, he mentions Pop Dynasty a lot, and the hot flavor is wide receiver in 2024. Everybody can't get enough of wide receivers. It doesn't matter how many good wide receivers there are, how much they're blending in. People, they spend multiple firsts for wide receivers, regardless of whether or not they're scoring a ton of points. I'm thinking of Jackson Smith and Jigba last year. How does wide receiver factor into your dynasty super flex leagues? How many do you want to roster? What types of profiles are you looking for at the wide receiver position? Let's just get into that because I think there's a lot of conversation to be had in 2024 around the wide receiver position. Evan, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah, sure. Wide receiver wise, you know, for me, I'm typically going quarterback like most early in the draft. And then I'm usually looking for that stud high upside tight end, mainly because I play in mostly tight end premium leagues. So there is a perk to that. I like having a safe option at tight end, one that I'm able to figure out. And at wide receiver, there are studs of studs at wide receiver. And then there's this middle ground that goes from give or take about wide receiver 20 all the way down to like wide receiver 50. And I think it's just such a giant hoopla of a mess right there where it's just, okay, I can figure this out. So I typically end up going with a spattering, more of like a shotgun approach at wide receiver. When it gets to the middle rounds of a startup, if we're talking a snake startup, you know, usually closer to that like 6 through 10 range, I'm just kind of pounding one after another, 4 straight wide receivers. Typically, obviously not every draft works out that way. You know, there could be value that falls. There could be other ways that you're looking to build. But yeah, so wide receiver wise, I'm looking at that. I'm looking at high efficiency offenses. I'm looking at offenses that have some of the better play callers. Like I know the Indianapolis offense, you know, great play calling going on there. We're looking at the Rams offense, great play calling going on there. You know, I'm looking at Shanahan offenses, things of those natures, guys that I know are going to be consolidating targets and also scheming it up so that they have guys that are going to be able to get open. They're going to have designated routes for them to be able to run. You're looking at offenses of those natures, and then you're combining that, in my mind, with those top 15 attempts per game that I'm looking at in offenses to try and find those higher volume twos that can still be able to be contributors, because most of the high volume ones are already gone by the time 6 through 10 come around.
I really like that point about the twos. Almost every single year, we've got something like 3 wide receiver twos in their own offense who are top 12 scorers in fantasy football, and they're so often overlooked. I think this year, a couple of the names that really stick out to me, I mean, Devonta Smith, first and foremost, right? Like a perfect candidate if you're to be targeting one of those wide receiver twos. Who else comes to your mind that meets that?
Debo, right off the rip. I mean, some might say Debo is the wide receiver one there. Addison is a young player that a lot of people are down on right now because he is behind Justin Jefferson and doesn't have a quarterback. So I'm looking to be able to buy the dip on Addison in that offense. Wide receiver twos. I mean, heck, later rounds, I'm going to take a shot on the often injured Mike Williams, because he is the wide receiver too there.
Yes.
And I know that he's going to be super, super cheap. I'm also looking at bad offenses that are going to be behind in games, which is going to cause them to have a lot of pass attempts. So I'm looking at a Courtland Sutton with a awful quarterback situation, but wide receiver situation, I mean, he's the guy there. You look at tight end, you know, you're not really chalking up 80 plus targets for any of the tight ends. Situations like that.
How are y'all approaching the Chicago Bears wide receiver room and the Miami Dolphins wide receiver room?
Dolphins, I'm just full go. I think it's 100% that there's two targets in that offense. It's Waddle, it's Hill. I know that Hill has consistently said when his contract's up, he's done. And that's causing people to start to fade him a little bit. So he slipped from last year being like a early second startup pick to now he's going early third. So if you're giving me that round discount on a guy that's going to continue to produce as a top 5 point per game weapon offense, they're just able to scheme it up. They're able to consolidate targets. You're looking at the first read options for him. He's a first read option for Tua many times. I'm fully expecting Tua to get a long-term extension there. If Tua doesn't get a long-term extension, it completely changes the math. But I think at this point, it's pretty safe to say Tua is going to get that long-term extension. So I'm good with him. Waddle, I've never been a huge Waddle fan. I know there's plenty of people in our RPG leagues that are much bigger Waddle fans. So typically I end up pawning him off on them, but still a really good asset to have on teams that you have because of the consolidated targets. If Hill has to miss any little bit of time, he's going to absolutely be the target hog. The Bears offense, though, it's so frustrating. You look at Kmet and you look at Keenan Allen, and they operate in the same part of the field. They both want to live in that same part. I think it hurts Kmet a whole heck of a lot more than it's going to hurt Keenan Allen. I think it caps a little bit of the upside for DJ Moore, especially with a rookie quarterback coming in. I know last year Mike wrote his article on the impact of rookie quarterbacks coming in and what it does to offenses. I get it. Caleb is a different animal. But at the same time, he's still a rookie, still has to learn the league. You're trying to get new players installed there. You have an offensive line that is on the upswing in Chicago. So that is really good for me to be able to see. You have DeAndre Swift who can catch passes out of the backfield. But yeah, wide receiver-wise, I'm tempering expectations for the Bears wide receivers, and I'm still full go for the Dolphins.
Yeah, you mentioned first read targets. Are you looking at the Fantasy Points data suite for those? Is that your source?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really cool tool, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, I recommend any of the listeners who haven't checked it out, you can get a free trial. The data suite is just unbelievably deep. And while there's a ton of information there, it's really easy to understand. We do these things called standard operating procedures in season where we're talking about waiver ads, buys, sells, you know, next year, this year type assets. And I use that data suite almost every single week to pick those outliers out because it's really easy to find them. But let's turn it over to you, Mike. How do you approach the wide receiver position?
Yeah, I feel like I went dormant over here. So what I like to do with wide receivers, so it depends on the format, but let's talk about most dynasty leagues. You start three wide receivers and you have two or three flexes. In that case, I like to get an elite wide receiver one. So we're talking about Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Amon-Ra St. Brown, CeeDee Lamb. And then there's like a couple of other names that are floating around in there. So you're trying to anchor down there. That's why I like picking towards the back half of the first round, because then you can get your anchor quarterback and your anchor wide receiver one. And then for the other four positions, I didn't mean to do this, but I found myself doing this across leagues. Maybe it's just a personality trait. But I'll grab one or two young, solid targets. So we're talking like a Drake London before the Kirk Cousins news. We're talking like a George Pickens. We're talking a couple of other players in that realm, Chris Olave. And then I'll grab crusty guys, Adam Thielen, Keenan Allen this year, like guys that nobody's really excited to go grab, but you just offer a second or a third, you go get them. And then I want a volume play. Talking with Deontay Johnson, Keenan Allen a couple of years ago, like the guys that when you sort by targets earned or targets per route run, it is a ridiculous metric that these guys are sticking out on the other side. And then I'll grab a couple of young ascending players. So I was super in on Rashee Rice last year. I was pretty excited about that. Maybe JSN takes a step forward, but like for some reason, his dynasty price continues to be his dynasty price. So I try to find guys that they look like they're going to be on the upswing. Right now, it seems like the dynasty community is getting better at that. So they're always a step forward, and it's hard to get discounts on those players anymore.
Totally. How are you allocating your rookie draft capital at the wide receiver position? What percentage of your draft picks would you say in the first round are going towards wide receiver?
Yeah, I love that you broke down. So first round this year, it's very clear. It's Marv, Neighbors, Adunze. And then in my mind, it's also Brian Thomas Jr., Xavier Worthy, and then maybe a Troy Franklin or a Ladd, depending on a landing spot in the back of the first. In past years, it depends on like the strengths and the weaknesses of the class. This is a particularly strong wide receiver class that's going to see them get drafted higher, which is going to see them get more job security. Like I actually did an article for Last Word on Sports on dynasty draft capital and how it insulates positions over time and like the hit rate of those players. Like first round wide receivers have a pretty good hit rate. Second round wide receivers don't. Weird. that's the too long didn't read version, but When we just look at players, so in this draft in particular, I think there's going to be a lot of rookie wide receivers that are going to be taking in the first round of your rookie drafts and also the first half of your second round, because you're going to see a lot of top 50 and top 60 picks spent on a position in the real NFL draft.
How far back were you going in that study, and what was the general hit rate? Was it over 55% for first round wide receivers?
It was under. It was actually closer to 35-40%, which is unfortunate. Maybe that's because of where I put the marker. Like I said, it was a top 36 season. For some reason, players just struggled to hit it, which is interesting to me. The hit rate for first-round wide receivers was somewhere between 35 and 40, depending on the class. Running backs was well over 50% for the first round. It was close to 50% for the second round, and then it tails off after that. And then quarterbacks, literally a coin flip in the first round, and then it dies. Like, if you are not a first-round quarterback, you almost get no opportunity. So maybe I'll go revisit this year, see how the 2023 class impacted it. But it went back to 2017, so it was about 5 years.
Well, I think that's interesting in the context of this rookie class. So if you've got one of these final, let's say we've got four, maybe even five quarterbacks drafted in the first round, does that make you more inclined to draft a quarterback, say at the 108, 109 over a wide receiver?
It does, especially in super flex formats, which we're talking about. So we're looking at these players, like a first round quarterback is going to have insulated value heading into year two and even headed into year three. Like Kenny Pickett, by all measurements, was cheeks. And I got fooled into thinking that he could take a step forward because the first round quarterback, the offense is getting better. Like the narrative starts spinning. Zach Wilson heading into year two still had a lot of value. And even midway through year two, like we were watching him be one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. We were still like, I don't know, maybe he turns it around. So when you look at those quarterbacks, they're going to hold value. And for rebuilding teams especially, like get the value, hold on to it. And then if you don't believe in that quarterback, you can flip them later versus a Quentin Johnston. Like, he came out, he stunk. He is useless. Like, you can't sell that guy for the 206 or higher at all. Like, when you see these receivers and running backs flop early, it's harder to flip them for value later. So,
go ahead, Evan.
I was going to say, I also think it's really interesting to hear you say five, because when you think of the dynasty landscape and the dynasty community, I mean, heck, you can just go on Twitter these days and you can very quickly figure out what quarterbacks Twitter doesn't like, what quarterbacks Twitter does like. Yep. And I think it's very clear that there is a very big divide on McCarthy.
Yeah.
And there's a very big divide on Penix. Bo Nix, people just think is mid. For some reason, they think that he's not gonna be anything to note. So if Penix slips into the first round, you're gonna see those stands of Penix, which I don't think is gonna happen, but they're gonna see the stands of Penix be able to insulate that value a little bit more. Whereas you go back to a guy like Mac Jones, using him as the example here, the dynasty community did not like Mac Jones coming out, period. He was a first round quarterback. You go back even further, Daniel Jones. They absolutely hated Daniel Jones when he came out. And as soon as he wasn't good, the value just went straight to rock bottom. So yeah, that's something also to consider.
100%. The Vegas line this morning was over under 4.5 quarterbacks in the first round, and over's the favorite right now, which is kind of mind-boggling to me. Like, I feel like 5 first-round quarterbacks would be a lot, like, tying for the record, but we do this every year. People are going to bet the over. They're going to lose money. The American dream will continue to live on.
All right. So let's dig back to last year's class. We've got Bryce Young, right? Somebody who, despite his stature, right, he was getting pretty good draft capital. What are you guys doing with him right now?
Right now I'm buying depending on the price. So one of my buddies earlier texted me. He's like, man, I was really bummed when I didn't get Bryce Young, so I got CJ Stroud instead. it depends on the price. So it's always funny when we talk about trade calculators and the people saying, oh, he's a buy low because of the price. Like, only one person in your league drafted him. They then held him for the whole year, which built an emotional attachment to him. Like, they're not going to sell him for what keep, trade, cut, or DLL, like, whatever your calculator or favorite analyst said to buy him for. Like, you're going to have to offer a little bit more. So I would be willing to offer the 109 because I think that he has, one, job security, because Carolina is probably not going to move off of the number one overall pick in 2 years. We haven't seen that happen in quite a while. And two, he finally gets weapons around him. I'm a big believer in Deontay Johnson. I'm a very known Steelers fan, but also, like, he's an elite target earner. He's a great route runner. The drops are overplayed. But now that he has a little bit of help around him, hopefully he can take that year two leap. And if he doesn't, first-round quarterbacks, insulated value, halfway through the season, I could probably move off of him for a random first.
Yeah, what about you, Evan?
Yeah, I'm pretty close to lockstep with Mike. I think I'm a little bit back, 110, mainly because I think that 109 is just going to get a little propped up because I do think BTJ and then also JJ McCarthy are going to slip into that top nine in most formats. So 10 is where I really start having question marks at this point. And if I'm having a question mark about it, I'm willing to take a chance on a quarterback that was the number one overall pick. Watching a ton of college football, as I do, I saw what he did in college with some not great wide receivers, especially in that final year that he was in college. You look at the Panthers and they said, okay, we need to protect the interior to be able to allow Bryce to be able to have a clean pocket, to be able to step up into, not have to feel like he's going to have to roll out, not feel like he's constantly getting pressured right up the middle, having to move off of his spot, which hopefully should help him. I mean, they went out and paid big money to Hunt and Lewis to anchor the guard positions for him. And center was not an awful position for him. So, you know, you're looking at trying to figure out tackles as it comes through the draft, try and figure out maybe a tight end of consequence. So, yeah, I mean, I'll go in and I'll buy Bryce as my upside QB3 if I'm feeling spicy on most teams.
Yeah. If I can offer one more thing on the Bryce front, we are going to find out very quickly whether or not he has taken the year two step forward. So I don't want this to sound like we're painting like rosy bushes and the sky is clear and everything's gonna be great. Like if it is week two and he is still struggling to hit the middle of the field, anticipation throws, if he's struggling to work through his reads, like you will find out very quickly, find the manager that didn't and offload him immediately. So I didn't love the free draft, which is why like I'm buying with hesitancy, but the price that he was, the price he is now, the path to success is there. So I'm in.
Yeah, he was the slowest to make a decision of all of the 32 starting quarterbacks last year. And he was one of the least likely to check down. One of those things needs to change if he's going to be successful, right?
Yeah, which is hilarious because like he supported Jahmyr Gibbs' amazing Alabama year. Like he knows how to use his running backs effectively. The issue is that going super football nerd into this, like when he takes his dropbacks, he takes them very slowly and not in a rhythm like other quarterbacks do. Like you're normally taught from the time you're a high schooler until you're a pro, like 1, 2, 3, read, hitch, read, hitch, read. And he does, let me mosey on back, stand on my tippy toes, see what I can see. Oh, there's nobody there. Let me, oh, quick spin move. Like he was used to being a magician and he's falling on those bad habits when he doesn't have the elite athleticism to break it up. We're watching Justin Fields, but like maybe he has time to fix it still while Justin Fields is like, he's just an athlete that we're just going to roll out there and hope that it works out.
Let's also remember that he did have a coaching change last season, mid-season, especially being the play caller. Like it makes a big difference for a rookie quarterback to be able to have stability there, not be consistently changing who their coordinator is, who their head coach is, who's telling them what to do, who they're listening to. Yeah. And it can become a confidence thing very quickly. So willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, Mike's absolutely right. You should be able to know within those first four games whether he made that leap, put in the time this off season, put in the time with the receivers to be able to get better, whether he has that drive. And if he makes that leap, you'll see, okay, there's at least some drive there. If he just comes out and falls flat on his face, that becomes a major drive issue for me.
Yeah. Not to hijack this. Canales, like Dave Canales is the new Panthers coach. In his initial interviews and the way that he is talking about the way he wants this offense and this team to look, it is the right thing. Like he's talking about fixing Bryce's footwork. He's talking about making the like image match up from feet to toes to eyes to figuring out where everything's going. Like part of the reason that I'm in on Bryce is because I'm in on Dave Canales and like, I'm excited about the route of the Panthers organization, which is hilarious because they were just the worst team in the league and they over-signed a bunch of guards, but we'll see.
Yeah, a lot of really smart analysts are cautiously optimistic, like you two seem to be, on Bryce Young, which makes me cautiously optimistic. I don't necessarily lean into individual player evaluations. I rely on smarter folks, people who watch more film. I watch every single football game, but I'm watching where the football goes, not necessarily breaking down player skills and how they're being used in offenses. Like I use numbers for that. And I rely on y'all for those individual takes. So I really appreciate that. One guy you brought up, I want to talk about Justin Fields. Let's start with you, Mike. Is he broken beyond repair? Where are you at with him?
Yeah. He is broken beyond repair if you ever want him to run a Shanahan system offense or an offense that relies on timing and rhythm. However, let's remember what the Arthur Smith offense is. It is a mobile quarterback who makes one read. If it's not there, he has the option to check down or run himself. If you're thinking of a quarterback that could do this, we're thinking about a younger Russell Wilson who is now in the room to mentor him, or current Justin Fields. Like, if anything is going to work for Justin Fields, it is this system and this year and this opportunity. But we'll find out very quickly whether or not Justin Fields can be fixed. The arm talent's there. He's a supreme athlete. Like, if you are building a quarterback in a lab, you want it to look kind of like Justin Fields. We need him to not have gone through his Chicago Bears experience. And if there's an organization that can fix him, hopefully it's the Steelers, but we'll see.
Evan, is Mike wearing black and gold colored glasses? Is Justin Fields salvageable here?
Unfortunately, I'm thinking that he is not a salvageable NFL starting quarterback. I think he's going to end up having the career arc that you see a lot of mid first round quarterbacks end up having, which is going to end up being career backup with upside. And look, you know, for NFL, you're going to get paid well being a high upside backup, a guy that can come in, be a bridge quarterback, be able to run an offense, keep it afloat, basically. You know, you're doing a patchwork type of offense. You're saying, hey, we're rebuilding, we're figuring things out. But yeah, I mean, basically every passing metric that you look at for Fields, you're looking bottom sixth of the league. Like,
but ahead of Kenny Pickett.
Who isn't?
And that's the key for Steelers fans. You know, they actually have two quarterbacks that they think both are better than what they've had since Big Ben. And that gives Steelers fans a little bit of hope. And also, let's remember the amount of Justin Fields stands that thought it was absolutely criminal of where he went in the draft, how he fell on draft night. I mean, there were people trading 104s, I think, if I remember, at the very end of the season for Justin Fields in Superflex leagues. Like, there were people that were still completely bought in. So the moment that Justin Fields gets back on the field, is the starting quarterback, is announced as the starting quarterback, whenever it ends up happening, he's going to have that value that's going to shoot right back up for a team or two in your league that is still holding out hope for him.
If I may offer, I am one of those recovering Justin Fields fans. Like, I, coming into the draft, like, I thought it was a two-man race between Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. I was like, this guy's a supreme athlete who, when he was at Ohio State, he was, like, reading all over the field, and, like, making the correct throws and, like, hitting throws in rhythm. He was a little slow to, like, get back and hit his plant field. Like, he was doing a lot of the things that you want an NFL quarterback to do. And then he went to the Bears. And holy, holy, holy smokes, if there's an organization that can hurt somebody, it's the Chicago Bears. The last 4 years, they've done a facelift. They're really excited. Like, this is now a good landing spot for Caleb. But what the Justin Fields came into and what Caleb's coming into now, it looks like Chip and Joanna came in and flipped this house, and it looks lovely now. So.
All right, let's bring this back to Dynasty. Let's say that you are a Justin Fields believer, but he doesn't win the job, right? Each of you has said that you want to roster approximately three starting quarterbacks in your Dynasty Superflex leagues. How are you fixing your position? Are you more inclined to draft a rookie and roll that 50-50 shot? Are you trying to trade into veterans? How are you fixing the one of three Superflex positions that now requires attention?
I want to jump out because I think Evan and I have the same idea, because we play a lot of leagues together and we end up messaging either each other or other members of the leagues. Like, I'm going to go find the team that has started 0-4 or 0-5, and I'm going to find the Matt Stafford. I'm going to find the Kirk Cousins. I'm going to find the Aaron Rodgers. Like, let me go get your disgusting old quarterback. And hey, look, you want to kickstart a rebuild. I'm here for you. Here's a 2025 second. Enjoy it. This is for you. This is to help you. Let me have your quarterback who's scoring points now, and let me save my season while you worry about feeding the pot a little bit more.
Yeah. So, I mean, Mike hit the nail on the head. We do that very similarly. I'm not afraid to go into the season with two quarterbacks. You know, if I'm going into the season with two working quarterbacks, I'm fine with it. Like, I will figure out how to make trades, how to maneuver in season when you start having those 1-3, 0-4, failed contenders. Oh, darn, my team just lost Justin Herbert. Oh, I just so happen to have an Aaron Rodgers, a Stafford on the bench, a Kirk Cousins on the bench, like, you know, as my QB2 maybe. Oh, well, I lost Herbert, so my season's tanked. Like, I'm just trying to think about next season already at this point. And I'm going to those guys. I'm making them a strong offer. Like, I'm not trying to lowball them. I'm not afraid to push my chips in when I need to push my chips in.
So when you've got a two quarterback build like that, I think it's time to talk tight ends. You play in tight end premium leagues. How often are you starting a tight end in your super flex position and your flex positions? And how steep are the premiums that your leagues are in?
Yeah, so most of my leagues are either a full premium point or 0.75 premium points. Okay. So it's either two PPR tight ends or 1.75. I do have a few 0.25 and a few just no premium. But for the most part, we're talking two PPRs and 1.75, in which case I don't typically have them go into my Superflex, because if I'm not starting a quarterback there, then it's whatever's the worst of the flexes as it goes down, how Sleeper likes to end up sorting in best ball style. Or I'm looking at it going, okay, you know, who is that last guy on Monday night? And they're going in that position to give me as much flexibility come Monday night with who I'm going to throw in there. But yeah, for the most part, in those two, three builds, it's a quarterback going to the super flex. And then I'm usually getting one more tight end that ends up going into my flex spots.
So you're starting two tight ends typically in these premium formats?
Typically two tight ends, one in my tight end slot and then one in my flex slot.
So what does that build look like? Who are you? It doesn't have to be a name, but what do those profiles look like? And how many bench tight ends do you roster?
Yeah, bench tight ends. I'm getting the down and dirty bench tight ends. You know, we're diving deep into the dredges to try and find some of the guys that I think have that touchdown potential to kind of have like a Tanyan type of season with that. And then I'm going early on tight ends, my personal preference, you know, looking at the young guys that can anchor the position, because the way that I like to do it is I like to get that young guy that can anchor the position. And then I like to get one of the more middling kind of mid age, like the 27-year-olds. So like this year, you know, it's that like Njoku, Ferguson, Schultz range of tight ends. That I'm going to be looking at. The guys that I know may not be that high-end producer, but give me the stability to have a second one that I can count in most weeks in my flex spot. And then I'm coming in and I'm grabbing a Laporta, McBride, Pitts, Hockenson as my young alpha tight end. And that gives me two, which then allows me to take the dregs and just kind of go down in the depths and just look for a guy that is a tight end on a team without many wide receivers. Hunter Henry, as an example, on the Patriots. Dolchich, I'll take a chance on him as an example here. Just going through some of those kind of gross tight ends to think about. Because if they do end up starting to hit and you have that Hunter Henry start to the season, in those premium formats, you can easily flip it for a second. And people will happily pay that because they see the production right now. And Dynasty gamers have such a short attention span, unfortunately. I love us Dynasty gamers, but it's what have you done for me recently once you get into the season? And I'm looking to basically check off my tight end position from the startup and say, hey, I don't need to invest rookie draft capital into this. I don't need to think about trading for the position in season. It's a position that I just set it and forget it.
Mike, how aggressively were you pursuing rookie tight ends last non-point scoring season? And how has that affected your roster builds coming into this year?
Yeah, so I unfortunately bought into the kind of overall narrative that rookie tight ends won't contribute that often, that they're not going to be that good. And even as I heard like the lore of Sam Laporta and Dalton Kincaid growing, I was like, no, not really that bought in. Like, I'd rather just buy low next season and expect a McBride career arc, like expect a Kelsey career arc where they don't really contribute in their first year and then all of a sudden they grow into their role moving forward. That was wrong. But I also look at last year's class and look at this year's class, and I'm going to invest in Bowers in my top seven rookie picks if he falls to me in that way. But outside of him, I'm looking at Jatavion Sanders, I'm looking at Ben Sinat, I'm looking at like Eric All from Iowa. Like those are some guys that they could contribute on an NFL team and be really exciting for our dynasty teams, but they're not going to have the immediate breakout that Dalton Kincaid and Sam Laporta had. Like, when we look at what those seasons were, like, those are two of the top 10 rookie tight end seasons ever. Projecting that year after year isn't a winning game for anybody other than Bowers. So maybe I'll swing on a couple of them late, but I'm going to take the one early. Everybody else, punt completely.
And just talking about tight ends, I was curious because I know people have been steaming Bowers up in most consensus rankings. So, you know, just happily pulling up Keep Jerry Cut over here. Tight end three.
Wow. Tight end three
is what they have Bowers at right now.
Oh my gosh.
And that's like neck and neck with Trey McBride. I mean, he is less than 100 points behind Trey McBride and less than 100 points ahead of Dalton Kincaid. So,
all right.
If I may offer quickly, there's a couple of positions where it's talent over position, like talent over situation, no matter what, tight end and quarterback are not two of those positions. Like, a quarterback can be ruined by a bad landing spot, and a tight end can definitely be ruined by a bad landing. Look at Evan Engram. Evan Engram wasted away on the New York Giants for years and years and years. And then we put him in a competent NFL offense, and he has the second most receptions by a tight end ever in Jacksonville. People don't realize that because it's Evan Engram and he's gross and we all hate him. But, like, there are players that they just get held hostage, and I am not willing to put Brock Bowers as my tight end three in Dynasty until I know that he's going to an offensive coordinator that will use him the right way, because I don't trust these people.
Totally. All right, so that leads me to all sorts of thoughts.
Good.
How do you guys use KTC, trade calculators, consensus building tools? How much do they factor into your own valuations, or are you strictly using them as weapons against your league mates?
Yeah, so when I build my rankings, I try to build them without looking at any outside sources. So I'll look at stats, I'll look at ages, I'll look at advanced metrics like yards per out run and first downs per out. Like, I'll pull up all of my nerd stats, but I'll pull up no other rankings. And then I'll go in and I'll compare it to a Keep Trade Cut, a Fantasy Pros consensus rankings. Like, try to find something that is about consensus and make sure that I'm not completely off kilter. Like, if I had George Pickens, wide receiver two, I would be like, oh, okay, Steelers goggles were on, my bad. But I try not to let them influence me too much, other than to just make sure that I'm not completely off kilter. Or if I am, I have a very good argument for why I think this player is undervalued, overvalued, dead to me, alive to me, etc. So I use them. They are very useful for setting trade offers to be like, hey, this is what it looks like. But if you send me a screenshot of Keep Trade Cut, I'm going to be very angry as part of the trade offer.
Totally. What about you, Evan?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that I love using Keep Trade Cut for is the 30-day trend. If you look at the 30-day trend and I see a green arrow, that typically tells me that it's going to be a little bit easier to trade that player. I'm going to be able to get a little bit closer to what generically is considered market value, because I know there's going to be more people in my league that are probably going to value him on the upswing right now. And a lot of people are willing to buy in to the hope of what somebody can be. And they start talking themselves into, okay, like, if he takes this next step, oh, he got a new quarterback. Like, Kyle Pitts is the perfect example. Kyle Pitts has had a very rough situation because of the quarterback. And now all of a sudden you're starting to project him. Oh, okay. If he does what he did in yards per catch during his previous seasons and he gets 80 receptions, because you start looking at him, oh, TJ Hawkinson, maybe he's going to have that same role. Maybe he's going to produce similar to that. And you start projecting all of that. Well, we haven't seen him in that offense. We don't know exactly how the offense is going to be run. We don't know the one read, the two read. How are they going to use him? Is he going to be running the same route concepts? Is he going to be getting downfield as much? Is he going to be having as much yak ability, being able to get in open space? So these are all things that are kind of making me temper my expectations a little bit for Kyle Pitts, where other people are just full blown. Oh, okay. He's about to vault into that tight end three range, you know, have a top three tight end season because he finally got the quarterback upgrade and that can unlock him. So yeah, I mean, Kyle Pitts is up 12 in value, and Dalton Kincaid's up 11 in value right now, mainly because of the Diggs trade. You have the Diggs trade, which is pushing Dalton Kincaid up because a lot of the sentiment is, well, they don't have a wide receiver of consequence right now. So you start using that against your league mates, start sending out offers to be able to get rid of these players on your team. And I find that it's a lot easier to get deals done.
Evan, I have Dalton Kincaid and Kyle Pitts in our two tight end league. I would like you to buy both of them.
My league mates have, for some reason, decided that Kyle Pitts is a buy, but only at like absurdly low prices. I've never had more disparate valuations than what my league mates think they should be able to pry him away for at this offseason. It's bewildering to me. But I want to stay on tight end just for one more second, and then we can move to one final topic and close this thing out. How important is it to have an elite tight end? It used to be you had Travis Kelce, or you had maybe Mark Andrews, maybe George Kittle a few years ago, but there were like two or three tight ends that ever mattered to any degree. And that number seems to have expanded a little bit. We're at like six or seven, maybe even eight tight ends that you feel not only okay to start, but good about having in your tight end one spot. So Evan, in your tight end premium leagues, like how does that factor in for you? How important is having a true tight end one for you?
Yeah, so I think tight end is a incredibly stratified position right now. You have the old production guys that are slowly falling in dynasty value, but are still giving you elite production. You're talking top six tight end production. And then you have the younger guys that are on that upswing that most people are buying into, pushing up most dynasty rankings, that you're hoping that they're going to be producing as they were previously, as the outlier season for Mark Andrews, as the Kittle seasons that we've seen in the past, as Ingram last season. I mean, Ingram was an absolute hit for most people last season. So if you want to have that win now build, perfectly fine going after the older guys, because I know that I'm going to get a season, going to get two seasons out of them as elite production. I'm going to be able to get them significantly cheaper than the youth. But absolutely love being able to get the young tight end and check off positions. I think I mentioned that before. That's really something that I appreciate being able to do. If I can double down and get two stud quarterbacks and then get a stud tight end, well, to me, I've just kind of set my roster construction in a way that now I don't need to think about QBs, don't need to think about tight ends. And now I can just take a bunch of shots at wide receiver, a bunch of shots at running back, and really isolate those positions.
Nothing incites more panic than when you don't know who your QB2 is, and then like Taysom Hill is your tight end, and now you're like, well, the rest of my roster is all right, but I don't know if these people are going to score any points. So
yeah,
I agree with Evan there.
It makes DJ Moore matter so little when you have Taysom Hill in your tight end one spot.
Yeah.
All right.
Tommy, I actually have an interesting question here that you brought up talking to your league mates and what they're offering you.
Yeah.
So do you ever think of keeping like a little journal often? I know it sounds archaic, but keeping a little journal on your league mates to try and understand and kind of get in their brain and play that dynasty psychology side of it, where you're taking notes when you're sending offers. Oh, how are they responding? Are they just straight rejecting? Are they countering with something that's just like absolutely crazy? Are they messaging you back saying, hey, that's not the type of player that I'm buying. Oh, I'm looking for more of this. Are you doing that in your leagues?
You mentioned Leo earlier, sort of the godfather of the notebook, of keeping tabs of your league mates. I do that to almost an absurd degree. I keep logs of every transaction that has ever happened in any of my leagues. And I try to Six Sigma my league mates. I build out tendencies for them. And I try to almost, like in jiu-jitsu, I try to leverage their own momentum against themselves, because that is really where the edges are, in my opinion. It's not in getting players right. It's in getting your opponents right and using their weaknesses against them, their inefficiencies against them, because the margins are so much greater with inefficient managers than they are in being excellent at player evaluations or in roster construction even, which I think is a massive edge. But I think you've touched on something that is so near and dear to my heart, and I appreciate you bringing it up, because with a little bit of effort, I think a lot of dynasty players could become so much more proficient in crafting trade offers that will be accepted, in blocking their league mates' waiver moves, in pushing their league mates into poor roster constructions, poaching quarterbacks at the right moments. There's so many different advantages. And we're, what, almost an hour into this episode? We could go another hour just on this topic because I feel so passionately about that. But I want to turn it to y'all. Do you guys do this, and how does it work for you?
Yeah, so I don't do a journal. What I do is I play in leagues with a lot of similar people. So all of our RPG leagues have, you know, listeners to the show and that they love to come in, and then friends, family, whatever. And I'll make a mental note, or I'll like text somebody and be like, hey, what do you think about this? And like see what consensus values are. And then over time, as you build those relationships, like I'm a big people person. I'm not studying the person. I'm trying to open the door so that I can be like, hey, I'm your trusted league mate. Talk to me about what you're looking for here. Hey, I like, and it's not to like be weaselly. Like I truly do want to know like what they're looking at and what they're trying to find. But when you are like, they send you offers in other leagues and say, hey, what do you think about this? Because you've built that relationship and now you're friends and everything's good, like you get an inside scoop into their mind and you're able to understand these are the kind of offers that are getting them close. And I got a deal done today because I was like, hey, I know that there's this guy that he responds really quickly to news and he is also a Browns fan. So I was able to apply both of those things in opposite directions and get a Njoku for Tank Dell trade done. So
nice. That's awesome. Great topic. I appreciate you bringing it up. I do want to close this out here in a minute, but when I think of the two of you, I think of rookie evaluations because you're both so good at it. I don't want to talk about first rounders. I don't want to talk about second rounders. I want to talk about third rounders. Just give me one or two guys that the super friend should have their eye on at the wide receiver, tight end, or running back position. We'll leave quarterback to the side for this conversation. Who should the super friends be drafting at the 306?
Evan, you want to go first?
I was going to say you can go first, but yeah, sure. I can jump in here. So when I'm starting to think about it, I'm starting to dive kind of deep into the wide receiver pool here, saying, okay, third round, you know, looking in that Malachi Corley range. I've seen him go in a lot of third rounds. If Brendan Rice gets a landing spot, people are going to see the name and just throw him straight up. I know I've personally not been a huge Brendan Rice fan through all the process. Johnny Wilson, if he transfers over to tight end, would be huge. And then Jamari Thrash is another one. I know, Mike, I'm taking all your thunder here. But Jamari Thrash is another one. I think he absolutely played an alpha role on Louisville. The Louisville football program hadn't been good for a very long time, and they worked on turning it around. And I think he is very much a wide receiver that's completely overlooked, that you can probably get in the fourth at that point. And he was a number one on his team. He knows what it is to lead a wide receiver room. He's just a player's player from everything that I've heard. And athletically, I mean, he checks most of the boxes, in my opinion. He's not going to absolutely jump off the page at you, but he's able to get the job done. And I think he could settle into a solid wide receiver two role in the NFL.
Yeah. And then, so I'm not looking at ADP right now. This is just off the dome. So I'm sorry if they're too early. I'm sorry if they're too late, but these are just some names that pop into my head around the 306. Malik Washington, he led all sorts of like advanced metrics. We're talking about like missed tackles forced per route. We're talking about yard per route run. Like, he was an elite producer. Granted, a little older of a prospect, but really excited to see. As far as wide receivers go, it's him and Javon Baker and Jermaine Burton are the three that I'm willing to take a swing on if they don't get the draft capital. Because again, like draft capital drives hit rates. And we haven't seen day three receivers hit very often at all. Everybody's going to be chasing the next Puka Nacua. Like, it's not this year. Don't worry about it. But Jermaine Burton has all the measurables that you're looking for. Bit of a head case off the field, but if he can put it together, maybe he's going to be the next George Pickens. And then Javon Baker, just silky smooth at the catch point. Like, he knows all the ways to manipulate his body, stay inside. Like, he knows how to manipulate defenders through all his routes. Love Javon Baker. In the third round of most rookie drafts, this is where I just start throwing darts at running backs. I'm talking about, like, Audric Estime, Bucky Irving. Like, pick your favorite running back landing spot and draft a running back with a pulse there and just see what sticks.
And this is the perfect draft to be able to recoup a running back room, to be able to restock your running back room. We look at the running backs across the NFL, and we have so many guys from that 2017-ish draft that are still sticking around. And they're getting significantly older. They're hitting that RB age cliff, or they've already hit the RB age cliff. And I'm looking at this running back class going, there's a bunch of guys that have specific roles, you know, first and second down bruiser, much like Tyler Allgeier. I mean, we saw a very good season out of Tyler Allgeier, and I think there are running backs in this class, talking a Ray Davis, an Audric Estime. Marshawn Lloyd, I think, is starting to get steamed up by the community, so you probably can't get him. That's probably going to be more of a second-round pick at this point. So, yeah, I mean, there's running backs that will be in talks for that pick that I think can serve as any role.
Love it. Well, I really appreciate the insights, y'all. And I'm so glad that we got to meet up and chat today. Why don't you go ahead and plug your content, because it is really stellar stuff. And this is the time of year where the Super Friends need to be consuming it. So go ahead and give some plugs real quick.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Tommy. If you guys are looking for rookie breakdowns, our long form shows on Tuesday, or just more of Evan's beautiful face, you can find it at the Fantasy Football RPG podcast. Just type in Fantasy Football RPG, look for Dragons, turn left at the initiative sign. It's okay. And you can find all my written work over at Last Word on Sports.
And then just to plug something that we have coming up, there's not very much 25 rookie talk going on. So we are going to have an episode coming up here before the NFL draft this year to start talking about 25, so you can start planning your dynasty rosters. I always plan my dynasty rosters a year in advance, so, you know, it was last year. I knew that there was going to be high upside, high production running backs up at the top. You know, this year I was looking at a wide receiver class. Last year I was looking as a tight end class. You know, looking into next year, I'm looking as a running back class. You know, we start having those cycles that you start seeing the players and start being able to do that analysis, saying, I may not be able to get that stud this year, but I'm looking at next year saying, okay, if I need running backs on my team, I'm trying to stock up.
Yep. Go get you wide receivers and quarterbacks this year. Tune into the show to figure out what you need next year. But hey, if you're still listening to the Super Friends Super Show, like and subscribe. Tommy crushes it over here. He's doing so much work. He's trying to bring you awesome guests. He's trying to rotate through people. So just help the homies help you. Give a little 5-star rating if you're on Spotify. Like, whatever you're doing, just like and subscribe to help Tommy out.
What a pro. Look at that. I can't think of a better way to wrap this thing up. And let's do that. I want to thank you guys for joining me today. We certainly need to have y'all on again. I would love to, at least. Especially, let's bring John on next time. We can talk some more Superflex strategy. But thank you. Thank you to Dynasty League Football for the platform. Thank you to Heart and Soul Radio for the music. And above all else, thank you for listening, y'all. Until next time, stay sexy and super flexy.